Today is January 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. partial government shutdown continues into its 33rd day, and Pope Francis will make his first trip to Panama on Wednesday, where he will address more than 150,000 young people.
Vatican officials said the focus of the Pope's 26th foreign trip will be regional problems, migration, the fight against corruption and violence, and the role of women.
Also ahead, Afghanistan and Taliban have opened a new round of peace talks with the U.S. in Qatar. It's all on today's International Edition. Republicans in the U.S. Senate have released a spending proposal that would end the partial government shutdown, taking direction from a proposal by President Donald Trump that he called a compromise plan. We have online White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman to further brief us on the matter. Hello, Steve.
Good afternoon from the White House.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay.
So, does this latest proposal have any legs?
Well, if it does, they're very tiny and slow-moving legs. We have seen no significant movement from the Democratic leaders in the House responding to this in any positive manner. The president, of course, saying that the Democrats are playing games and telling his Republicans no cave, meaning do not bow to any demands from the Democrats on this.
So what is the Republican proposal?
Well, the proposal that was announced by the president on Saturday would give temporary protection to these so-called DACA recipients, young undocumented and others, in exchange for the president getting nearly $6 billion to expand a border wall on the U.S. southern border with Mexico. And that's a monetary amount is what he's been demanding all along. And the way that the Democrats see this is the president is not making any compromise whatsoever and is and they believe that their base wants them to stand firm, and the president believes that his base wants him to stand firm.
So what is the Democrats' proposal?
Well, the Democrats appear to be willing to give a lot less money for border security, especially anything that would go to build a wall, and they would like to see something more concrete than just a three-year extension for the DACA recipients. But the Democrats' main demand at this point is before we do any negotiating about this, you've got to end this government shutdown and allow hundreds of thousands of federal workers that are now facing a second missed paycheck at the end of this week to get back on the job and get paid.
With the Republicans holding a 53-47 majority in the Senate, do they have any help from the Democrats on that front?
Well, yeah, in the Senate, I think they would need seven Democrats to basically support their proposal. From what I can tell, they might be able to get one or two, but to get seven looks pretty challenging.
So basically, the 800,000 federal workers affected by the shutdown, they do not see any light at the end of the tunnel here?
Not yet. And what you do have people on both sides saying that these workers are essentially being held hostage to politics. But, of course, it's the Republicans blaming the Democrats and the Democrats blaming the Republicans.
Steve Herman, White House Bureau Chief, thank you.
My pleasure.
Among the top stories trending amid Brexit woes and EU squabbles, France's Emmanuel Macron and Germany's Angela Merkel meet. Indonesia's campus rape victim seeks justice but fears criminalization. an ex-Canadian diplomat businessman arrested in apparent retaliation of Canada's arrest of Chinese telecom executive. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. A dual U.S.-British citizen and former U.S. Marine was arrested December 28 for what the Russian Federal Security Service said was carrying out an act of espionage without specifying exactly what he was accused of doing. To brief us on the matter, we have online VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Pleasure to be here.
So give us a little background on Mr. Whelan and tell us what's going on over there.
Well, it's a complicated situation. You mentioned that he's got dual U.S.-British citizenship. He also holds Canadian and Irish passports. He has a background in the U.S. military. He was discharged after some larceny-related concerns. He was passing bad checks. And since then, he's maintained an interest in connections in Russia. And from what we know, in December, he was in Russia. He said he was there to attend a wedding of a family friend when he got picked up. And we were getting a little bit more information from the hearing earlier today in Russia. His lawyer coming out and saying that it was a closed-door hearing because it's a security matter. He's charged with spying. But his lawyer came out and said that during the hearing, which the judge said he was going to be, Whelan would still be held in bail in Moscow, in detention there, that the Russians accused him of spying because he had a thumb drive, which apparently had materials related to espionage on it. His lawyer is saying that Whelan thought that the thumb drive he got was going to contain vacation photos, apparently some photos of historic churches and whatnot in Russia. And so that's where things stand right now. We know that from his lawyer that he had a thumb drive with questionable material. His lawyer says he wasn't aware of any questionable material on it. And the judge in the court in Moscow is saying Russia is going to hold on to Whelan until further notice as the legal process there moves ahead.
So that was why the bail was denied?
The judge, in the information that's been released and obtained by some Russian media outlets, has not given a specific reason why the bail was denied. We know that from Whelan's lawyer that he gave an impassioned plea to the court rejecting the charges against him and trying to make a case for why he should be released. And the judge simply said, based on the information they have, Russia was going to continue to hold him.
Jeff, there is speculation the Russians might try to use Whelan as leverage to the release of Russia's Maria Butina. Give us a little background on Butina and explain Moscow's motive, if there is one.
Well, in the history of spying between the U.S. and Russia, and just the history of spying in general, swaps are not uncommon. If one country gets spies from another, that country will go out, collect some of the known spies that are in their country, and then they'll do a deal exchanging their spies. So there is precedent for this, and there is precedent for it between the U.S. and Russia. The thing that's interesting here is that while U.S. intelligence agencies haven't said very much, there's no indication that any of them were actually using Paul Whelan or using him as a spy. And then you have Maria Butina, who's been a very high-profile case. She was convicted in the U.S. on charges of trying to infiltrate U.S. political organizations, and notably the National Rifle Association, and trying to convince them and influence them to take up positions that would be favorable to the Kremlin. She was convicted of acting as a foreign agent. And so she's being held in prison right now on those charges. And she's become a cause célèbre for many in Moscow, including the Kremlin. Putin, on one hand, Russian President Vladimir Putin, on one hand, has talked about how he knows not who she is, and she wasn't at all familiar to the Kremlin or to Russian spy masters. But at the same time, Russian diplomats, including the U.S. embassy the Russian embassy in the U.S., has taken her picture, they've put it on their social media feeds, and they keep talking about and advocating for her release, saying that really she is someone who's been caught up in something that is way beyond her, and in fact, they've maintained a degree of innocence for her. So whether or not there's a deal possible here remains a question. Russia officially has said that it's not interested in a deal, and that's not what this is about. But only time will tell.
That was VOA national correspondent Jeff Selden. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Economists warn that political uncertainties and trade tensions could undermine global economic growth. Rights groups warn of the dangers of growing economic inequality. About 3,000 political and economic leaders have gathered in the Swiss resort town of Davos to discuss global business and economic trends at an annual economic forum. VOA's Latika Hoke reports.
The setting for the annual World Economic Forum is an elite ski resort in the Swiss Alps. Anti-poverty advocacy group Oxfam has brought a message for the influential leaders gathered there.
The richest people in the world, the most powerful people in the world, the political leaders of the world, take action.
The setting for the annual World Economic Forum is an elite ski resort in the Swiss Alps. Anti-poverty advocacy group Oxfam has brought a message for the influential leaders gathered there.
They are the richest people, and we want them to be the solution people in the world, ending extreme inequality in the world. It's out of control. It's widening, to reduce, it's hurting our economies, slowing our economies. It's undermining democracy. Trapping people in poverty.
Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum founder, acknowledged that the global economy has left some people behind.
In the age of social media, we just cannot tolerate anymore that people are left behind. So we have to create a much more inclusive globalization.
The head of the International Monetary Fund said Monday that the global economy is growing, but at a somewhat slower rate than expected.
We need to redouble our efforts.
In the age of social media, we just cannot tolerate anymore that people are left behind. So we have to create a much more inclusive globalization.
Fighting corruption. The head of the International Monetary Fund said Monday the global economy is growing, but at a somewhat slower rate than expected.
The IMF director said there is no fear of recession,
but the trends must be closely watched and vulnerabilities quickly corrected.
From fixing the global trade
system, while leaders expressed general optimism, a pre-forum survey of hundreds of business executives showed the opposite.
The mass class divide has never been wider than between the elites who think the world
the
is going
IMF
great
director said there is
the
no
mass
fear of recession,
really
but the trends must be closely watched. The pessimism and the vulnerabilities quickly caused by global uncertainties.
While leaders expressed general optimism, a pre-forum survey of hundreds of business executives
showed the opposite. So you never know where these things are going to go. Today have, okay, we've got
the mass class divide has never been wider
the conflicts with China, and then the next day, oh, hold on a second, we've got a great meeting coming off.
The survey also showed an increased lack of trust in the pessimism in the business circles is caused by global uncertainties. Washington.
One day we think Brexit's going to happen, and the other day it's off. So you never know where these things are going to go. You today have, okay, we've got trade barriers up.
Pope Francis will make his first trip to Panama on Wednesday for the World Youth Day Festival that is expected to be attended by more than 150,000 young people. For more than 2 years, the Central American country has been getting ready to welcome the Pope and young people from all over the world. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
During his 4 full days in Panama, Pope Francis has a full schedule. The main purpose of his visit is to take part in World Youth Day 2019, during which he will also meet with young people who cannot attend the festivities. They are young people at a detention center and young AIDS patients. Vatican officials said the focus of the Pope's 26th foreign trip will be regional problems, migration, the fight against corruption and violence, and the role of women. In Panama, there are high hopes and much excitement on the side of young people and thousands of officials and volunteers involved in the preparations. Panama's President Juan Carlos Varela addressed the nation ahead of the papal visit.
próximos días seremos testigos de uno de los más importantes eventos globales.
He said that in the coming days we will be witnesses of one of the most important global events that will be celebrated in our beautiful country, World Youth Day and the visit of Pope Francis. He added that it will be a week during which thousands of pilgrims will visit from the five continents and more than 150 countries. He said it will be an opportunity to show the world the beauty of our land, the joy and nobility of the heart of our people. Panama has a population of about 4 million, of which 88% are Catholic. During his visit, Francis is expected to deliver 7 speeches and celebrate 2 masses. The 2 main World Youth Day events will be a Way of the Cross held at the Cinta Costera and the Mass held at the Metro Park in Panama City. In a first for a World Youth Day, Pope Francis is scheduled to take a 30-minute helicopter ride on Friday to a youth detention center for 200 inmates in Pacora to hear confessions of several of them, including one convicted of committing a double homicide at just 16 years old. Archbishop José Domingo Ulloa of Panama said Pope Francis's meeting with young detainees will be a very special event in which young people deprived of freedom will take part in a penitential liturgy with the Holy Father. After the closing Mass for World Youth Day on Saturday, the Pope will be visiting the Good Samaritan Home, a center dedicated to helping HIV and AIDS patients, regardless of their sex, religion, sexual orientation, geographical origin, and who lack the resources to live and cope with their illness. Pope Francis will also be dedicating the altar of Panama's newly renovated 400-year-old cathedral, hold a meeting with bishops from Central America, and have lunch with some of the young people attending the World Youth Day gathering. The Pope will be back at the Vatican on Monday morning. He has a number of other foreign trips already scheduled in 2019, including the United Arab Emirates in February and Morocco in March. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from the universities of Scotland and Kent studied and analyzed some of the world's oldest cave paintings at sites in Turkey, Spain, France, and Germany. They say their investigations reveal that rather than just being primitive depictions of humans and animals, the ancient cave art actually suggests that people from as far back as 40,000 years ago had comparatively advanced knowledge of astronomy than had been thought. The Scottish and English researchers say the animals depicted in the ancient art are actually symbolic representations of star constellations, which were used to signify dates and designate occasions such as comet strikes. The researchers who detailed their findings in a study published by the Athens Journal of History say this astronomical knowledge could have helped ancient mariners navigate the open seas, something that could have impacted migration paths of prehistoric humans. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Afghanistan's Taliban opened a new round of peace talks with the U.S. in Qatar on Monday. The talks come on the same day that Taliban insurgents launched a major suicide bomb and gun attack against a military base in central Afghanistan Monday that killed at least 126 security personnel. VOA's Lori London started out by asking Michael Kogleman, director of the Asia program at the Wilson Center, how significant the meeting was.
Well, this announcement that the Taliban are going to be talking to U.S. officials in Qatar is a pretty big deal, given that very recently the Taliban claimed that it was unhappy with the United States and that it was going to back out of what had been several months' worth of intermittent discussion. What's essentially happened is that the Taliban feels that its interests are being served by having these talks in Qatar, which essentially means that the Taliban is going to be talking to U.S. officials about the idea of some type of future schedule for a withdrawal of U.S. forces. From day one has always been the Taliban's main objective, is to get the United States to commit to a very concrete schedule for when it will start withdrawing forces from Afghanistan. So in that regard, the fact that these meetings in Qatar are going to be focused on this very issue of a troop withdrawal, that's a pretty big deal.
This is the longest running war in U.S. history. A lot of people don't even really understand why we are still there. Is it likely Afghanistan will go back to pre-9/11 with the Taliban pretty much in control and human rights issues being raised more?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of uncertainties about what's going to be happening in Afghanistan. And I should say that, yes, the Americans are going to be talking to the Taliban about the idea of a future withdrawal schedule. But first of all, we don't know if there will be any sort of agreement between the Americans and the Taliban official on some type of troop withdrawal schedule. But we also don't know if the U.S. were to agree to start planning to withdraw troops by a certain date, if the Taliban would then hold up its end of the bargain and stop fighting. The Taliban has said, well, as long as we know that all foreign forces are going to be leaving Afghanistan, we'll be ready to stop fighting. But let's face it, the Taliban would have a huge battlefield advantage if all of these foreign forces were to leave Afghanistan, all 7 or 8,000 U.S. troops. Other NATO countries would follow by taking out their troops. All of a sudden, the Taliban would have a great opportunity to take up the fight and try to overthrow the government in Afghanistan. But to your question as to what could happen in Afghanistan, certainly I think there is a very real fear that if to be a peace deal, and we don't know if that's going to happen, that would entail the Taliban agreeing to talk to an Afghan government that it rejects as illegitimate. If there were to be a deal and the Taliban were to stop fighting and it were to somehow join some type of post-conflict government administration, absolutely. There's good reason to worry that Afghanistan would return to the horrors that occurred in the late 1990s. Taliban ran the country the last time. They essentially had women that, you know, couldn't leave the house and couldn't go to school, rampant human rights abuses. You know, there's a lot of concern, particularly within the Human Rights Committee, that these considerations are not being taken into account by the U.S. and all the other countries that are trying to launch peace talks with the Taliban.
Well, it's interesting because you talked about some sort of conversation about the attacks stopping, but I found it rather interesting that as this new round of peace talks begins, we hear that Taliban insurgents launched a major suicide bomb and gun attack against a military base in central Afghanistan on Monday. At least 126 security personnel were killed. Why are these two things happening concurrently? Peace talks and suicide bombing from the Taliban.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, this has been the reality in Afghanistan over the last few months, or really over the last year. Even though we've had this momentum toward launching talks, and even though there have been discussions between U.S. officials and Taliban officials, that the Taliban has continued to stage these horrific attacks. And I think it's very simple. I mean, the Taliban, by staging these attacks, wants to put more pressure on the Americans and essentially remind the Americans that the Taliban would be coming into these negotiations from a position of strength.
That was Michael Kugelman, a director of the Asia Program at the Wilson Center, talking to VOA's Laurie London. You have been listening to International Edition. You can find us at VOA News, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrick Deya, and our engineer, Jackson Nfunganye. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Enjoy the day.